Today's shiur is going to serve something of a different purpose. Instead of it being just about Vayechi, since Parshat Vayechi is also the end of Bereshit, and there's always tons of great stuff to talk about in Vayechi itself, both the hand switching, the whole Brachat Menashe and Ephraim or to Yosef, whatever that is, the rejection of Reuven from leadership, the rejection of Shimon and Levi from leadership, the nature of the Brachat to Yehuda, the order of the Brachot, the funeral cortege that takes a very bizarre roundabout route, Yosef's oath at the end, Pakod Yifkod, Yosef's age, you name it. There's a ton of stuff to talk about. But so as a result of that, we don't often focus on the fact or step away as the panoramic view that Vayechi is the end of Sefer Bereshit and we're having some sort of a siyum this week. So let's do a siyum on Sefer Bereshit. And because I think that there are numerous themes that course through Bereshit, some of them overt and very much in your face, some of them a little bit more subtle, and some of them very subtextual. So as an example of an overt theme is the creation of the nation. That's right there. Matter of fact, the Ramban in his introduction, or at the beginning of his Perush, when responding to Rashi's comment about the Torah should have just started with HaChodesh HaZalachem, and why it included the first chapter, and so the Ramban's take is that Bereshit is not just Bereshit to the world, but Bereshit Ha'am, Yetzirat Ha'am, the creation of the nation. Okay. There is certainly an overt theme of Bechirat Ha'avot, and an overt theme of Bechirat Ha'aretz, the singularity of the land, the singularity of the Avot and their family. There's an overt theme of acceptance and rejection, and such that in each case there is, and we're going to actually look at that, there is a brother who is accepted and a brother or some brothers who are rejected, etc. There are also some subtle themes that Chazal pick up on and make a big deal about. And an example of that is the theme of poetic justice, or what we call midah keneged midah, which you find coursing through Bereshit in all sorts of ways. Perhaps the most overt expression of it is we find when Yitro comes to Moshe and he says, "Ataya datik nadol adonai kol ha'elohim kiva davar shezadu alehem." I know that Hashem is the greatest of all gods because, notice, he doesn't say the only God, greatest of all gods. Because Badavarsha Zadu Alehem, which simple pshat is that the Egyptians are deliberately oppressed in such a terrible way, and nonetheless God saved them. I know that God's greater. But Rashi quotes the famous Midrash that Bakderasha Bishlu Banit Bashlu. In other words, the pot that they tried to cook Am Yisrael in, they got cooked in. And that is that they ordered to throw the Jewish babies into the water, and they ended up getting drowned in the water at Yam Suf. And the idea of Midah Kemegida, of course, is consistently through Bereshit, and things as fine and immediate as Avimelech wants to have relations with Sarah, and as a result of that, Avimelech and his whole household can't have relations with anybody. And as a longer stretch, which is the whole Hakerna theme, when Yehuda sends the garment, or the brothers send the garment, then they say, "Hakerna, do you recognize it?" And then immediately to Yaakov, and immediately Hakerna is the words that Tamar uses to Yehuda, right, to remind him. And such themes are well known, and are pointed out again in Midrashim consistently. And there's many more of them to unearth in the text. But I want to look at something else, which is, I think, a much more subtle theme that takes place from almost the very beginning of Bereshit all the way really to the very end. And that is, we'll start with this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Avraham to Eretz Canaan. Where is Eretz Canaan? You can argue that Eretz Canaan has inherent Sgulot, inherent mystical treasures to it, going back to creation of the world. Or you can argue that Eretz Canaan is special because HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that's the place to be and made it special. What's special about Eretz Canaan? Either way, the way it's created or because HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose it, what's special about it? Where is it located? It's located right in the middle of the world. Right in the middle of the world. It's right before Europe, Asia, and Africa meet. That's Israel. which of course means that any army trying to go anywhere is going to run through Israel and over Israel, and happens consistently in history.
The world is round. Isn't everything in the middle of the world?
Yeah, I mean, from a civilization perspective, not a geographic perspective. And from a perspective of geography of the time of Tanakh until fairly recently, when people, fairly recently, in the last 800 years, people realized the world was spherical, and we're seeing the world as flat, then Eretz Yisrael was certainly right in the middle of civilization and the land masses that people even then were aware of. Furthermore, what is the climb of the areas that in Israel you would know about but aren't there, meaning Egypt, Aram, Mesopotamia? What is the climb there? There's typically serious rivers that regularly irrigate the land. The land is lush, and that impacts greatly on the way you relate to the land and the way you relate to vegetation and agriculture. Eretz Yisrael is very different, and the Torah spells that out. Eretz Yisrael is a land of hills and of valleys and needs rain, and without rain you die. And so it's a very different kind of a climate and an environment. So if you look on a surface level, you would see that one of the tensions that courses throughout Sefer Bereishit is a tension that we read about right away. I apologize for the ink here. It didn't come through very well. But the stuff that's yellow is really supposed to be green. I guess they're all kind of, you know, extra colors. It's okay. Is that you notice that that at the very start of creation, Adam is presented as a farmer. As a farmer. And like nothing can grow because Adam ayin lavorata Adama. Right? And then stuff grows. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes Adam, puts him where? In Gan Eden. For what purpose? Le'ovda u'le'shomra, to work the land. His job is to be a farmer. And when you see the description between those two faint texts of Gan Eden, something we talked about 11 weeks ago, I think, you see that Gan Eden is described as a lush place where there are huge rivers that come through it. Right? And with the rivers are rivers that are associated with Mitzrayim and with Mesopotamia, with Babel, where that's what there's a constant irrigation, constant flow of water, constant source of water there. And that's where Adam sort of starts out. When Adam is thrown out, he's told that the land is not going to be very cooperative with him. All right? So there seems to be a move away from this very relaxed, very very set table kind of environment of Gan Eden. And then he sends Adam out. He exiles him, which means Adam is now in a process of movement. Adam and Chava have two kids, Cain and Hevel. And this is where the tension starts. It's the first tension that we have between people. It's Cain and Hevel. What does Cain do for a living? Cain is an Isha Adama. What does Hevel do? He's a Roetzon. And that tension between the ranchers and the farmers, just take a line out of Rodgers and Hammerstein, that that tension is consistent throughout Bereishit. It's true about Hevel and Cain. And by the way, if you look at it, in that story, who's the bad guy? I can't say who the good guy is. Who's the bad guy? Cain. And Cain's the farmer. Hevel, who I guess is just the victim, is the rancher or the shepherd. Okay. You go through a little bit further, and you find that, and it's not all the texts are here, because there's way more text than we can handle on one page, but what does Avram do for a living? So Avram himself seems to be a merchant. But where does he invest? When he gets a lot of wealth, what does he invest in? He invests in sheep, and he's a herder, and he's always on the move. Everything you read about Avram, he's moving here, he's moving there. He does move from Aram, and maybe even from Bavel, and he moves to, at some point he's in Bavel and Ur Kasdim, moves to Canaan, then he moves to Mitzrayim, then he moves back to Canaan, and he's moving consistently around, which you can do when you're a rancher. You take your animals with you. So Avraham, who was certainly in our books a really good guy, right, triple checks or whatever you want to give him, seems to be not himself a herder. He's got herders, but he is of that ilk of the man on the move. And so at this point, we'd say Hevel, Avram, pretty good. And by the way, just to top it off, somebody who we kind of casually like to think of as a hero and someone to emulate. I don't think so at all. And I think that the text actually puts him down seriously, is Noach. And when Noach gets out of the teva and ends with that very ugly scene in the tent, how does that scene start? Vayachal Noach ish ha'adama. He's a farmer. And he plants a carom. And that leads to his downfall. So at this point, you could say, oh, the Torah is trying to favor shepherds over farmers. The Torah is trying to favor movement over stability. Dynamism over staticism, but also constant wandering over settledness. And is that really true? Well, here's where we get a nice fly in the ointment. So we shouldn't think things are black and white. When we meet, you turn on the page, when we meet Avraham's sons, we find something interesting. Avraham has two sons that we know about, that we care about. I mean, there's a bunch of Dodanim and all these other guys, but the two guys that we care about are Ishmael and Yitzchak. And we would think, of course, and certainly the case, Yitzchak, good guy, Ishmael, okay, tragic figure, but not part of the Masorah. What does Ishmael do for a living? He's an archer in the desert or in that area, which means he's somebody on the move. What does Yitzchak do? Yitzchak's a farmer. Yitzchak comes to Pleshet, and he plants. He's a farmer. So suddenly things are being a little bit confused for us. Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? Now, we could tear everything away and say, good guy, bad guy has nothing to do with what you do for a living or your lifestyle. It has to do with who you are. Since you could be a good farmer, bad farmer, good shepherd, bad shepherd. Could be. But there does seem to be a constant emphasis in the Torah on these livelihoods and the roles that they play in who we have. And then we get to what seems to be the biggest and most obvious example of this, which is Yaakov and Esau. Because what does Hashem tell Rivka? You're going to have two kids and they're going to split from the womb, right? As soon as they're born, they're going to be separate. And what are we told as soon as they grow up? The first thing we hear is they grow up and Esav is an ish sadeh, a hunter and an ish sadeh, man of the field. And in the meantime, Yaakov is a yoshev ohalim, simple pshat yoshev ohalim, he's a shepherd. Right? So we've kind of gone back to that dichotomy, and that seems to inform a lot of their tension. By the way, think about it. When there's tension, who moves? We would love it for Esav to bug out and say, I don't belong here. Instead, Esav stays put and Yaakov runs away. When Yaakov finally comes back, Esav has shifted a little bit to make room, but he's shifted. He hasn't gone on the move. He's just taken his whole family and moved to here and stayed here. In the meantime, Yaakov is wandering. Yaakov comes to Canaan. He wants to settle down. He can't. And the family continues to wander. By the way, what does his sons do for a living? They're shepherds. So Yaakov is totally taken within that lifestyle. But that's not the biggest conflict that exists. The biggest conflict that exists comes a little bit later. Because we talked to this about, I think, 2 years ago. Longer than that. When Bnei Israel come to Mitzrayim, the brothers come the first time. They fall in front of Tzafnat Panech. They don't know who he is. He does what he does, plays the mind games on them, you're spies, etc. Okay, they come back. They come back the second time with Binyamin, and suddenly they're welcomed into his household. They're going to eat with him. Well, what do we hear about? When they sit down to eat, how do they eat? Yosef sits by himself because he's viceroy. The brothers sit by themselves, and the Egyptians sit by themselves. Why won't the Egyptians sit with the brothers? Because they find it abominable to sit with shepherds. Why do they find it abominable to sit with shepherds? So the reality is, if you roll back a little bit, you can find the answer. Paro's dreams, which we've talked about in a different context, about interpreting the dreams. And what are Paro's dreams? What are the objects in the dreams? What are they? Cows and sheep. So the problem is, we need to get out of our mindset. When we think cows, we think hot dogs. Right? When we think cows, we think milk, maybe. But in Tanakh, when you think cows, what do you think? Plowing. Even in Chazal, cows typically are used for plowing, not for meat or milk. Meat comes typically in Tanakh from sheep, and milk typically comes from goats, chalei bizim. And so what's Paro dreaming about? is dreaming about cows, and sheaves, meaning his entire dream is agrarian. It's about, and that's what it really is about. It's about the wheat production, the famine, plenty of the famine, because all of Egypt is an agricultural society, which is very easy because they got the Nile flowing through them. And it sounds outrageous to say this, but I didn't say it. It's in Bereishit. You look at Mitzrayim, and it looks like Gan Eden. You got a river flowing through it, or a river runs through it, if you wish. And there's lush stuff everywhere. And if you want to start a new garden, you just dig a little channel off the river. Boom, you got water there. I didn't say it. It's in Bereishit. Avram and Lot have to separate. Avram says to Lot, "You go north, I'll go south. You go south, I'll go north." Lot raises up his eyes, and what does he see? He sees Sodom and Gomorrah, Kegan Adonai Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. What's Gan Hashem? Gan Eden. And the pasuk says it looks like Gan Eden, like Eretz Mitzrayim. Why does it look like Gan Eden? Because it got a river running through it, and everything is lush, unlike us here up in the mountains where we're praying for rain. So that's what Mitzrayim looks like, and that's what Paro's dreaming about. Now, how a drought exactly happens, you have to go all the way down to Ethiopia to figure out what the headwaters of the Nile and what's slowing it up. Unclear, but his entire focus is that. And that's what, if you think about it, is surprising when you go back to Canaan. And here's Yosef, who is a shepherd with his brothers. His other brothers shepherd, he's a shepherd with Bnei Bilhan, Bnei Zilpah. Bnei Leah are shepherding up in Shechem. They're all shepherds. And yet, what's Yosef's dream? We're all working together in a field collecting wheat, which is perhaps foretelling they're going to move to Egypt. A couple of years ago, they discovered, in taking the DNA of a sarcophagus, of a mummy, that the mummy had a vegetarian diet. I don't know how they figured that out. And evidently, there's evidence that during parts of Egypt, parts of the period of Egypt, including perhaps the time that we were there, the Egyptians were vegetarians. And we understand why they'd be vegetarians, because if you're a farmer, you hate animals because, you hate grazing animals because they eat your crops. So what does Yosef tell his brothers when they come to Egypt? When you meet Paro, tell him that you are shepherds. Why? Because they'll make you live far away in Eretz Goshen. Eretz Goshen is in the Nile Delta. Well, you can't grow anything. So they'll go there and they'll be far away. They don't want them near us. That's why the Egyptians can't sit down. Because they're vegetarians, like, ideologically. But not because of some ideal of not hurting animals, although that may be the case. But because we hate these guys. So shepherds are bad guys. They raise these animals who hurt us. You want to eat. And by the way, Yosef does say shecht lunch for them. Which means Yosef's ready to feed them meat, but no Egyptian's going to sit at a table with somebody who's eating meat. It's disgusting. So they sit separately. So this tension between farming and ranching, which is not just a tension about theft, not just a tension about livelihood, it's a tension about lifestyle, and it's a tension about dynamism versus statism, versus constantly being on the move, versus anchoring down. And that's a tension that continues throughout Bereishit. Because think about it. How does our story begin? Our story begins with Lech Lecha. How does our story end? I'm here now. I'm dying here now. But one day God is going to move you from here and take me with you. That's the very last pasuk in Bereishit. Is Yosef is buried in Mitzrayim, but just before that, the pasuk before that is that he makes an oath that when God remembers you and takes you, take me with you. Which means, yeah, I'm here, but I'm not here forever. And it comes down to a very large question about who Am Yisrael is. I remember having a debate years ago with a distant relative who at the time, although she subsequently made Aliyah, I don't know if she's still in Israel, but at the time was arguing against Aliyah. Interesting. And her argument was, if we're supposed to be an Or LaGoyim, that was sort of the phrase she picked up on, how are we supposed to do that if we're all in one place? My answer was, that's not our problem, that's God's problem. God will make sure that we impress people from a distance. It's not a big issue. But there's something to what she says in the very historic fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to our bad behavior is not to afflict us in the land, but to send us out. And that starts from Adam. And then it goes to Cain. And it seems to even play out with Yishmael. Yishmael behaves badly in some way. He's exiled. It seems to play with Yaakov. Yaakov does some things that are highly questionable. And he's exiled. And then the brothers do something very objectionable. They sell their brother. And they're exiled. So there seems to be something in this idea of not getting too rooted down, which is maybe even salvific. Maybe it's even some sort of tikkun. And you take a look in Bahar, and it really may carry the seeds of this whole solution. Parshat Bahar is all about the land, about selling ancestral property, selling a house in Nir Choma, right? Being Makdish land. It's all about the land. Starts with Shemitah, goes to the land. And in it, there's a very strong tie of us to the land. But Va'aretz lo timacher litzmitut, ki li kol haaretz. The land cannot be sold in perpetuity because the land belongs to me, says God. So it's like there's a dichotomy. There is a pull between affinity and connection to land, well, awareness that the land's not ours. The land's God's. And the minute that we forget that, we lose it. And it's as if, from our very inception, the Torah is giving us both the tension between the farmer, the hainu, the guy who is connected to the land and anchored in the land and cannot move and will not move and will fight for his land, and the shepherd who, when things get tough, just picks up and moves, but on the other hand, sponges off everybody else. And the two are constant tension. The reality is, what's the nature of Am Yisrael, farmer or shepherd? It's just both. Both. Are we tied to the land? We've always been tied to the land. Baruch Hashem, in the last 150 years, we've had a chance to retie ourselves practically to the land. We've always felt tied to the land. And yet, what have we always been able to do when necessary? I remember years ago hearing this. It blew my mind at the time, and now I've adopted the same attitude. I have a dear cousin, somebody you all know who used to live here in L.A., who many years ago was organizing a trip for educators to Israel, and it had been a while since I'd traveled. And my wife and I were going to Israel, the first time we were going together. And it was a few weeks beforehand that I asked her, oh, you know what, I remember I don't have a valid passport. So I had to do one of those quick renewals. She looked at me incredulously. How do you not have a valid passport? And I realized every Jew always has a valid passport because you've always got to be ready to pick up and go. It's a weird kind of racial memory or cultural memory, but it's ingrained for a lot of us. And now, you know, one of our kids, their passport is close to, you know, to expiring. So me, I'm all over. You got to get it, make an appointment. You got to get it. Can't be without a passport. What, I think something's going to happen here? No, I don't think something's going to happen here in the next few months. But it's a mentality. And it all starts at Breishit. So you take a look at the very beginning of Breishit. What is Adam's job? Work the garden. Anchor the land. Take care of the land. And then what happens when you don't do it properly? You're not afflicted in the land. You have to wander. It's not just that we move you from this land to that land. Let's see if you do a better job here. Now you wander. Now, in Adam's case, it's here to here, although we're not told where here is. In Cain's case, it's Navanati Abaretz. You're going to wander. People try to settle in one place and build a tower so they can all live in one place. I'm following the Rashbam and Ibn Ezra here. And what's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reaction? Spread out. But is spreading out the ideal? Of course not. And you can't accomplish anything when you spread out. And you can't make any place holy if you keep moving from place to place. And so Bereshit presents you with both. You can't say the good guys are shepherds and the bad guys are farmers, because Yitzchak is a farmer. And Esav's the shepherd, or Ke'ilu, the guy on the move. But both of them are a reality. And if we look at who we are is born of Aramim. That's not me, that's Yechezkel, Tet Zayin. Canaan. Avich, I'm Ori, Yimech HaChitit. Right? And yet, where were we born? That whole passage. Vavor Alayich, Varech Mit Possessu Damayich, Vamar Alach Damayich. Where's that? That's about Mitzrayim. We're born in Mitzrayim. So we come from shepherd stock. We're born in farmland. We have both. It's real important to recognize who we are as individuals and as a nation, to recognize our strengths and our fallibilities. And Bereshit presents all of that. And in a sense, another answer to Rashi's first question, why did the Torah have to start with Bereshit? Why couldn't the Torah just start with Achor Zalachem? Is because the first thing is, you need to know who you are. And who you are is who your parents were and your ancestors were and what you come from. What are the values that are ingrained? And what are the tripwires that you have a tendency to fall over? What's your spiritual DNA and historic DNA? And when you know that, you're much more capable of actually addressing your own life and the value system you integrate and the legal system you're about to undertake at Har Sinai and embrace it, because you know what things are going to be pretty easy for you and what things are going to be challenges. You read Sefer Bereshit and you realize, oh, Reuven, Yehuda, you know what? Maybe I better be a little careful with the Arayot. I better put that on the stage. Right? And other things you read, say, good, that'll be pretty straightforward, that'll be pretty simple. How do we treat each other? Ooh, I better be very careful about that because I saw what happened with Yosef. Take Sefer Bereshit away and what happens? You don't know who you are. And if you don't know who you are, you can't really move forward. And so this dichotomy between rancher and farmer, between man on the move and man settling in, between anchoredness and dynamic movement is something that Bereshit presents to us as kind of who we are. And I think that starts from the very beginning. It takes us all the way to the end of Bereshit. And then, once we've learned that lesson, then we start Ve'elashmo Pnei Yisrael by Mitzrayim, which is the beginning of our story of embracing who we are and taking it now to Har Sinai, which is where we're now going to receive HaKadosh Baruch Hu's law that will implement within that reality of who we are.